Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access. Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Since we are reopening our practical behavior approach course, I wanted to spend some time today on the podcast talking about de-escalation. A big piece of the practical behavior change course is how to respond after problem behaviors happen. To me, this was an essential missing piece from so many behavior trainings, behavior literature, behavior books on how to respond when a problem behavior happens. Seems so simple, but I feel like we didn't have enough information and content around this. Everyone's really focused on being proactive and preventative, which I am too. I get how powerful that is. But as we know, proactive antecedent-based interventions don't work 100% of the time. So I really truly feel like we need a plan in place for how to respond when problem behaviors happen. And a big piece of that is using de-escalation strategies effectively. When our students are overwhelmed, upset, frustrated, angry, nearing meltdown mode, what can we do to keep that student safe, to keep the problem from not getting worse, and help our students bounce back so we can recover and then learn from it? So today I'm going to share my 6 do's and don'ts of de-escalation to kind of intro this topic. There's a ton to unpack with de-escalation, but I see this done incorrectly all the time. So I really want to dive in to how we can help a student de-escalate and what we should not be doing in those moments of a crisis. So do number one is do control your emotions. I think any de-escalation strategy or approach has to start with you. An escalated adult will not help an escalated child. You need to model calm for that child. You need to be the anchor that can help them regulate their emotions. And I want to, in a huge way, acknowledge that that is so much easier said than done. When we are in a moment of crisis, in a moment of a meltdown, it didn't just happen out of nowhere. There's likely a lot of behaviors that got that child to that place. So you are also feeling frustrated, overwhelmed, burnt out. I get that. I absolutely get that. But you need to remind yourself in that moment, I am the adult. I am the one that is here to support this child, and I need to get control of my emotions first. If you are kind of stuck on being overwhelmed, upset, burnt out, how is this child acting like this again? I'm so annoyed. This is so hard. Your actions will be in line with those thoughts. So as much as possible, take a deep breath and get control of your emotions first before even starting to support that child. Number two, and I feel like this one's so important, we could like even end there, but we're not. Do give space. This is such a common misstep. I cannot tell you guys how many times I have been pulled into a behavior incident or walked into a school and there's a big episode going on and there are 5 or 6 adults around one child. You guys, why? Why do we need 5 or 6 adults around one child? And I get safety, but like, if we're not talking about like an 18-year-old with some like super extreme behaviors that's 200 pounds and huge muscles, I mean, we're sometimes talking about a 6-year-old. We do not need 5 or 6 adults around a 6-year-old. You need as many adults that will keep that child safe, and you don't need those adults right up in that kid's business. You can have one adult nearby, another 1 or 2 in the background that can come to support if needed, but you want to give space. Think about how you would feel in your worst moment, in your most upset moment. Do you want a bunch of people staring at you? No. Do you want a bunch of people close, like that proximity? No. From a sensory standpoint, our kids need space to calm down, to de-escalate. And then from, you know, kind of a confidence standpoint, it can be embarrassing if we have all these people right there seeing this kid be upset and they're just getting more and more upset because there's so many people there. Other people can further escalate the situation. And these usually aren't 5 or 6 people that are standing there quietly. It's usually all people that are talking, trying different things. And it's no like bad intention. Everyone's trying to be helpful. But I think seeing the big picture is important, and having a plan can really help avoid this. If we have a plan, a crisis plan for how we're going to intervene, how we're going to help a child de-escalate, then we aren't going to have 5 or 6 adults there that are all overwhelming that child. And that brings me to 3. Do have a plan. If you have any child in your classroom that has any amount of aggression or self-injury or behaviors that could lead to some type of emergency situation, you 100% need to have a crisis plan in place. Do that right now. Put that on your to-do list. Make a crisis plan. I hope that you make a crisis plan and then never have to use it. That's what I hope for you. But I would rather you make a crisis plan and never use it than need a crisis plan and wish that you made one. It can be super simple. It can be something you write down on a sheet of paper right now with your team. If this happens and there's an injury or Johnny escalates or there's aggression happening, this is what I want everyone in the class to do. I want this pair to do this. I'm going to do this. This is when we're going to call for help. This is how we're going to call for help. Get into the details on that. Because when you're in a crisis, as we talked about with do 1, do control your emotions are heightened, right? And if you have a plan helps you calm yourself down. So it helps you achieve 1, and it helps you not make rash decisions. But you're like, okay, I have a plan. I don't need to get overly emotional. I got this. Let's go. When you're stressed, when there's an emergency, it's hard to make those decisions, but you've already made those decisions in a calm, rational state because you have that plan in place. I like a super simple plan that just says like how we know we're starting the plan, what adults are doing, how people are going places, when we're calling for help, something that can just outline where people are going and how we are going to maintain safety.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Now let's get to the don'ts of de-escalation. And this is going to be a hard one for you guys. My first one is hard. Don't try to teach. I know. We're all teachers. We want to teach. We want our kids to learn from every situation, every learning opportunity. But when a child is in a crisis or meltdown mode, they are not in the space to learn. Your job in that moment is not to teach them. It's to keep them safe and help them de-escalate. Teaching and learning can come later. But in this moment, it is not about instruction. And I think when we try to provide instruction too quickly, this contributes to overwhelm. This contributes to the behavior getting worse. So we need to like literally zip it, because teaching involves talking. Teaching involves being too close to the child, right? The child isn't ready to take in new information. They are shutting down. There is so much research in the last 10 to 20 years on what trauma does to the brain. And that child may be experiencing a moment of trauma and they may be just shutting down in that fight or flight moment. So give them the space, let them de-escalate. Teaching can come later. It will come later. It is not going to come now. The only goal is safety and de-escalation. Next, don't completely ignore it. Now you're like, Sasha, you're confusing me. So don't teach, but don't ignore it. When a child is in crisis mode or in meltdown mode, when they're starting to get really upset, we don't want to just totally walk away. right? We're not using planned ignoring here. We're not just going to remove all attention. We're not teaching, but we are supporting. We do want to be here for that child and help them as they are open to it, de-escalate. Now, from a behavior analytic perspective, I think sometimes we can get stuck in this kind of train of thought of, well, if I give attention while they're engaging in problem behaviors like aggression, then I'm reinforcing aggression. You are not necessarily reinforcing aggression by helping the child de-escalate. They are, again, as we said, not in the space to learn. And our most important thing is safety, is bringing that child back to a space where they feel safe and calm. And they likely need our help to do that. When our kids are the most upset is when they need us the most. They are communicating a lack of emotional regulation skills. So we want to be there to support them. We are not reinforcing the tantrum. We're not reinforcing the aggression. We're just safely helping them de-escalate. So I think from a behavior analytic perspective, we can get kind of stuck in some circular reasoning there. Even though you are giving attention to that behavior, we're doing that in the bigger purpose of safety and de-escalation, right? And that learning and instruction will come later. So yes, we're giving that attention to the behavior, but we're doing that because safety is that important. Last, don't try to repair too quickly. So we talked about the teaching coming later. The teaching is an important piece in the de-escalation process, but it has to happen after the child is fully de-escalated. You want to then repair, and then that is the opportunity for discussion or reflection if appropriate. But I see sometimes it being done too quickly. Like the child's like a few minutes at, you know, back in their routine, you're like, okay, well, let's talk about it. And just give them the chance to fully calm down. And then we can come in with that reflection piece, which will be the instruction. I think tools like a behavior contingency map are really powerful here for that repair and instruction piece, going back and looking at the different consequences of behaviors. I think looking at what contributing factors led to that situation is important as well. And if appropriate, and if the child has those communication skills, really looking to the child to see, hey, what could we do differently as a team, as the adult that supports you, to help this not happen again in the future? So wait until that full de-escalation. If that's the next day, that's the next day. And then you can repair. Then you can provide that instruction. So as I said, de-escalation is just one piece in how we respond to challenging behavior. Within the practical behavior approach, there are a few different ways that we look at responsive strategies. We look at how to set expectations, how to enforce those expectations and boundaries, how to de-escalate, how to repair, and how to use logical consequences. So there's a lot included in that whole kind of umbrella of responsive strategies. The practical behavior approach looks at approaching behavior in three ways. We want to prevent problem behaviors. I love that module. So many great strategies on how to be proactive and use evidence-based antecedent interventions. Then we look at responsive strategies. How do we respond when problem behaviors happen? And then the third tier is how do we build? How do we build those missing skills like emotional regulation, self-advocacy, flexibility? So important. We want to prevent, respond, and build. This can really lead you to creating this nice individualized plan for each student on how I'm going to prevent, respond, and build to really help decrease problem behavior. The practical behavior approach is a course that I am so incredibly proud of. This course comes from a perspective that is rooted in applied behavior analysis, but is also rooted in trauma-informed practices. This course is created for any educator, clinician, or parent that is supporting any child with problem behavior. So this course was specifically designed for all learners, learners with and without a disability, learners in a wide variety of settings. We talk about contributing factors to behavior such as diagnosis, trauma, sensory needs. All of this is included. I think this is an amazing course for gen ed teachers, but it also has such great strategies for special ed teachers and aligns really nicely with our positive behavior change course. If you have any questions on the course, please let me know. De-escalation is just a little taste, and actually this was just scratching the surface of de-escalation. There's so much to unpack here, and the course is filled with tools and visuals to help put all of these strategies into place. Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.